Welcome to the Events Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Taylor, and each week I talk with event entrepreneurs about how they plan, promote, and run their events. We help you build your events empire by growing your business using live events. Whether you're running community meetups, conferences, trade shows, IT training, music events, or literally any type of event, we focus on finding actionable tips that you can use straight away. The podcast is sponsored by Apps Events. We produce over 300 of our own events across the globe every year, from training to conferences, and we're now sharing our expertise to a small group of event professionals. There's a couple of ways we can help you. Firstly, we can run the logistics for your event. We have a whole support team who can handle all the heavy lifting for you. We can help set up your website and agenda, liaise with your speakers, deal with the huge volume of questions you'll get from attendees, we can liaise with venues, and we can come to the event to actually run it for you on the ground. Get in touch with James at appsevents.com and we'll jump on a call to see if we can help. Secondly, I offer one-on-one coaching to help event entrepreneurs grow their events. I want you to get more attendees, produce epic events, make more money, and most importantly, to do it all with no stress. So just email me at dan@appsevents.com and we'll jump on a call. And now, on to the interview. Hi, so welcome to the podcast. I've got returning guest James Schramko back for his third time on the podcast, which is fantastic, up there with Chris Ducker, my two top guests. And I think you all know James. So he runs superfastbusiness.com and Silver Circle, I believe. And we talked about a lot about your events, and I think we kind of flogged that subject to death in the last couple. We covered everything about what you do. But you've got a lot of expertise in tons of areas. And today I'd love to chat about building a team in the Philippines, something we've both done. You've done it at a much bigger level than I have. And building communities and why people might want to have a community. So let's kick it off. And it'll be two episodes. So, you'll get a link for the second one. But first of all, James, we're both in different places. Like I'm in Dubai. I usually live in Europe. And I just to give you some background, I kind of had enough. I was coming out here anyway for a big trade show. I was exhibiting at a trade show. And I just thought, screw it, I'll just bring the family out. And I've been out here for 2 months. And I was just getting so sick of the rolling lockdowns and just the hassle of Europe. And actually, it's been amazing. I know you're a big surfer. I'm actually going surfing after this. I'm a longboarder, but I'm snowboarder really, but I longboard when I can. And probably had to surf like every 2 or 3 days now, 2, 3, 4 feet. Like, great on a longboard, so it's been nice. I've been wake surfing in between. So it's been great. But what about you? What's your story?
I'm still getting over the fact that you can longboard in Dubai. I didn't know that.
Sunset Beach. No, there's it's only in the wintertime. But it's,
I'm just imagining some oil baron driving a big boat down along a shallow strip to create an artificial wave.
You know what? Like, it's like a lot of places. There's actually a big surf scene. It's like you go to some places like, in the Mediterranean, like Italy, where they're not really into surfing, but there's a few people really into it, and it's, if Thailand's like that and a few other places, and it's real, people are into it, and they get waves all through winter.
My surf coach was from Italy, and he would catch some occasional waves sometimes in Italy, but it's rare. I love Dubai. I think for you, it's like, must be great being warm and cosmopolitan. Yeah. For me, I'm in Queensland now, which is further north than where I was in Sydney. In terms of where I was in Sydney, I was in like the place to be in Sydney, Manly, the beaches.
Yeah, that was great.
I did notice when COVID came and the pandemic and people started working from home, it got really crowded. So it started to get very busy. I think everyone's like, hey, well, we can't leave within 5 kilometers of our house, so we'll take up surfing because we live near the beach. I'm at home all week. This is the time. So where I surf normally went from a sort of a weekday crowd of 5 or 6 people, because I'm very counter-cyclical.
Yeah,
I don't go to the peak in the morning or the afternoon. And normally that was the peak, and then everyone goes to work. But they didn't go to work anymore. So now there's like 130 people during the middle of the day.
Wow.
And then came winter and it's cold, and then this 5K radius lockdown and masks everywhere, and it just became like a bit depressing, really. So I thought, I'm out of here. And so now that my kids are old enough, except for the one who still lives with us, I was able to move interstate, and I'm closer to my parents who are up in Queensland. And I found myself a nice spot near the beach up in near Noosa. So
Oh yeah, vintage.
Now 6 days out of seven, I'm literally surfing by myself out the front, and it's almost have to pinch myself, and
that's amazing.
It's kind of a testimony or a working case of playing the long game of that sort of goal. I'm living a life much closer to what I always envisioned when I had a job and was wanting to break out of that and have my own business.
Yeah.
Now I'm in a nice area with beautiful sort of living situation, and it's just great for the family and the change in vibe and temperature. Yeah. And you know, everything from weather to food or whatever. I can understand why there's such a strong migration north in Australia, especially from the most lockdown states. When they can come, which will be in another month from when we record this, it's going to be a bit crowded, I imagine, but I'm still far enough away from the major bustle that it won't affect me, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Europe's, it's crazy. I'm lucky enough, we've got a place in the Alps in Austria. I've been going there, forever. I used to work in a ski school there when I was young. And Austria's just gone to, I don't know if you saw it, they've gone into full lockdown and they've made it compulsory vaccinations for everybody. Everyone has to get vaccinated in the whole country. You can't do anything now. If you're not vaccinated, you can't go to a shop, can't go to a restaurant, can't take public transport, can't do anything. Which, like, I don't know, you know, I want to stop COVID like anyone else, but I think it's just going too far. You know, I think there's too many draconian measures coming in. I think we just got to learn to live with it. I don't know what you're. It's interesting. What do you think? Because I know there's two camps of Aussies. One is like, well, Aussies are always like, we're the best country in the world. We're the best country in the world. But there's one camp, it's like, it's just gone too far. And there's one camp, it's like, it's the only way to stop it. Like, where do you fall on that?
I think I'm sort of sad for the way Australia's approached this. I think we have been a fantastic country up until now, where we've become a bit of an embarrassment, because it doesn't really matter whether you support or don't support the vaccination. I do think that the line is crossed when it becomes mandatory.
Yeah.
And I've seen what's happening in Austria. I've experienced it here. I mean, just to come to Queensland, I had to go to quarantine.
Yeah.
So, you know, like a few months prior, I came up to visit my parents. So we just, you know, drove to the airport, parked, flew up, hung out with them, had some meals, stayed for a little bit, Airbnb, and then we just flew back down. Next time I went, it literally took months and approval processes and then 14 days in a locked up room with a toddler at our expense, crappy food, not even a single opening window, no fresh air. And at that point I thought, I'm really disappointed in the way that we've approached this, that there is, for some reason, this total demonization. They've created two classes of citizens.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fully supported by some of the information that I've seen, at least.
Sure.
And it saddens me that it has gone like that. But it as it has with you, it would end up pushing people to seek other situations. And I think that's probably going to happen. Like, we couldn't even leave the country either. Like, we literally locked in to the country and locked into our house within a 5K radius. So it did get a little bit much. And I don't know if this is all worthwhile for a virus of this magnitude.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd like to see them have more of an emphasis on health and fitness and eating well and immunization through natural means, and handling it, going about it a different way than literally power overreaches. And there's one going on at the moment in Victoria, which is basically giving the government unlimited power to do whatever they want. And there are people protesting about that. And in fact, it was illegal to protest. I mean, that's definitely overstepping the line. You know, during the lockdown, it was illegal to go out and protest. So, yeah, I just thought this is a cataclysmic apocalypse. I don't know how it got to this. I'm deeply disturbed by what's going on, and it just seems like a massive overreach.
Definitely. I'm not sure if you've seen in Europe, but I mean, there's huge riots going on in Holland, in Belgium, and a few other countries now. And it's in Czech Republic, where I'm based in Prague, you know, it's coming and going, but I think it's going to get worse. So, I mean, Australians are very well behaved compared to a lot of European countries. You know, there's a much more of a tradition of, you know, getting to taking to the streets, I think. But I think people are going to reach a breaking point. Yeah, exactly. And like you said in earlier, I mean, it's why we're both lucky that we've got location independent businesses, you know. And I think there's been a huge interest. So obviously, you know, I'm sure you read the 4-Hour Workweek many years ago, and I've seen a huge amount of interest in running this kind of business now because of COVID.
Well, beyond that, I've actually some of my surf friends now have become online business owners. They went from employees because one of them in particular, he couldn't go into work anymore. He didn't like his job. He has a lot of skills. And I just kept talking to him about, like, why don't you do something else? And he goes, what else could I do? I said, well, so many things. Where do you want to start? Now he's a business partner of mine in one business, and he's really thriving because he's helping people with his skill set that he used to get paid for by one employer. And now he's spreading that around in a fractional way as a consultant. And he's building a team under him, which is a hybrid of people in other countries and locally. And it's a great model. But yeah, the same reason that I had all these people visiting me in the surf every day. It's like 2020 was the year that everyone sort of validated the concept of being able to work from home, even if they work for a big corporation. And I don't think it's fully elastic. I do not think that it'll just go back to the way it was. For the same reason, you've still got to take your shoes off if you fly in some countries like America because of, you know, the TSA regulations, because someone blew up a couple of towers, right? So when did that happen? A long, long time ago. And from that day onwards, it changed. Flying has changed because of things that happened. And I think because of the pandemic and the change in the way that people have been able to experience life, it will cause a massive push to regional areas, location independence type roles. It's really brought it on. That also, you know, in line with your topic, it's certainly done things to create a slight bit of inflation with remote workforces.
Interesting. Tell me about that.
Well, some of my friends who hire a lot of people, especially in the Philippines, are saying it's more competitive now to find staff and they have to pay more because a lot of people are discovering this. You know, obviously I was fairly early into it. I've had a team in the Philippines since about 2009, let's say. Okay. So well over a decade. Everyone in my team has been with me for 10 years or just about. So quite a long term. And now people are, you know, these larger companies obviously have been draining that country for call centers. Companies like GoPro and Dell and QuickBooks and all the big companies have had call centers and operations, but now the little players like the accountants and electricians and small businesses are discovering this, you know, workforce that was invisible to them, and now they're in the ring. So it's created a little bit of an inflation, a little bit of competition, a little bit of wage creep in terms of pay, etc. So that's been interesting. And then, of course, on another level, they've also had some of them have had varying degrees of difficulty regarding absentees because of COVID, because that obviously is a slightly less funded nation. They don't have as good capability to handle it. So it's you know, and they tend to live together, being, you know, a lot of family members, different generations living together and socializing together. So they've been pretty hard, savage lockdown.
Yeah, definitely.
And they do get taken away into little quarantine facilities and stuff. So it's a tough place to be. From my perspective, but I think there's a lot of opportunities created for them for the online employment for people who may not have considered that role before and used to work for corporates. So it's happening on both sides of the fence.
Yeah, cool. So I want to, that's really interesting. I want to talk a bit about why should people think about hiring in the Philippines, and then maybe a bit about how to make it work, you know, like you've had long-term people. I'll just tell you really quickly about my experience. I've got two team members, Gwen and Jane. Jane's going to be dealing with this podcast. Both been with me for 8 years, so not as long as you, but still a long time.
That's a very long time.
Amazing, yeah. I got it every year. I have a close relationship with them. But I've got Gwen and Jane, and I've tried a bunch of other people who haven't worked out, you know. And at this point, I've actually stopped looking for new people, and I work with people on a job by job basis. So for one example, there's a guy X also in Cebu, and he does all our image and graphic design. He edits the podcasts and things like that. But the two key members have been a long time. I originally hired him with Chris Ducker as a virtual staff. I know you're a friend of Chris. Had a really great time out in Cebu back in, yeah, I guess 8 years ago. I met Dan Andrews from Tropical MBA, who I'm friends with now. Met Chris, and it was great, you know. And I really enjoy it. But I've really never got it to work beyond these two. So I don't know. Can we start with like who should think about it? And I think you can help. I think your wife or you have got a company that recruits. Is that right for Philippines? So who should think about it? And then what can make it work?
Oh, well, people who don't want to do every task in their business themselves, and if it could be done on a computer, and if you may be financially dependent or not. I don't hire my team there because they're cheaper. That's just a sort of a benefit. Originally, I just needed some help. I tried to get help close to me, but it was a little bit hard. And then wages do creep up, but also you have other situations. If you have local labor, for example, if I'm Australian business and I hire Australian labor, I have a lot of other considerations.
Sure.
I've got payroll tax, I've got to pay a superannuation or 401k for your American audience. I've retirement funds, I've got to pay. I have to be careful about legislation in terms of, if you want to, if someone leaves. But then there's the old problem of the Western way. And this is a gotcha that gets a lot of people. And the Western way is someone apprentices in your business for a while, you pay them, they learn your business, and then they end up stealing your business model, your clients, and your staff. And that happens so
That's
often.
true. Yeah.
It's a Western cultural thing. And I've never had that happen to me from the Philippines. The
Yeah.
Philippines, why
Just
hire
happened
there?
to me recently, actually.
Because they have fantastic English because of the Americans being so involved in them, their history from 1940s through. So the bulk of young people speak great English. They have American English, so they're really quite a good fit culturally. They watch American movies, they consume American culture, they eat American food, they speak American English. So some people have this vision of like a villager running around in a like like a towel or something, spearing wild animals in mud huts. But it's pretty much just a normal place with some Asian influence in the sort of built up areas. And then the further out you go, the more regional, the more regional you get. But you also sometimes have struggles with things like internet, and so there are a lot of reasons why I like the Philippines. The culture is they're predominantly Catholic, so they have pretty good values. They have like the sort of they're good people. They're also family oriented, so they have a lot of loyalty and nurturing about them. They have a very good service orientation. They want to look after people and care. That's why you often find a lot of nurses in the hospital will
Yeah,
be from the
huge amount. Yeah.
Philippines, and service industries, hotels and whatever, everywhere.
Yeah. Here in
And
Dubai, every nanny, every waiter, every barman, any service role is always Filipino, so.
well, that's because a lot of them go offshore to make money. That's part of their culture is to, and you would have seen at the airport, they got their own line for overseas workers. So the culture is often to go to a Western place and earn a better income and send money back to the family. But the people who are still there can enjoy working for a Western company from the comfort of their own home and not have to experience difficulty in lifestyle. Now, you talked about visiting. It sounds like you've been to Cebu. But if you have people who are in the main areas like Manila and the surrounding suburbs, there can be a sort of a 1 or 2 hour commute in a sort of polluted open air, noisy diesel vehicle with a lot of smog and noise and even people sticking their hand in grabbing things. So it's like it'd be tough. And then they often go to a midnight shift in their call center till early in the morning, and they're eating meals at Starbucks during their shift and stacking on weight and living an unhealthy lifestyle of night shifting. And so it could be difficult. Like it's quite an adverse work environment for, you know, it's not conducive to health, but then they get to work from home. And if they work for a company like mine in Australia, they're on a very similar time zone. We're only 2 hours apart.
Yeah.
So that's good for them, but they will work for US companies and other time zones, UK companies, no trouble. They're really adaptable. Yeah. So there's that, and they're really, really good at learning and gaining momentum with things. And I have a different approach to you. I've hired full-timers. We don't really task source little stuff. All little stuff's handled in-house. We only actually hire agencies or contractors for high-level stuff that I'm not going to find a good fit for in the Philippines. Things like paid ads, high-level SEO, super high-level design.
Yeah.
Those things, we might bring in an expert and plug them into our Slack channel and they become part of the team. And then my team are the point people who work with these suppliers to grow the business.
Oh, well, actually, I am the same in that sense. My two guys are full-time and then they manage the people who do the contract work. Perfect. So it is just, like I said, I've just not hired anymore. So any sorry to interrupt.
Well, I think one of the major criteria then for why the hires don't go well, and this is one of the reasons why my wife and I started a business for my own clients, because it's a common thing I used to get all the time. But James, where do I get someone?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, well, I don't know where you can get someone. It was like back in the early days, I actually had a friend who had a company over there and he asked me what sort of person I'm looking for. I'd read the 4-hour work week. I'd put in a support ticket at Your Man in India, but they were maxed out because of the 4-hour work week effect. Yeah. And he ended up giving me a couple of people to interview on Skype and I chose one and we started with that and then we just went word of mouth. I said, but I don't know how you're going to find one. The problem is the supply source. If you're drawing from a pretty average pool or an average service, and there's so many shitty services and just dealing with retread employees who go from job back into the center, they end up getting pretty street smart and they might want to work for several employers. If you go into the jobs boards, then again, they're probably listing themselves there, working multiple jobs. So and I said, enough is enough. I'm finally going to open up under the hood and we're going to get referrals for my clients. And we charge a one-time fee for that. And then they can have, so we're drawing people from call centers and referral networks where these people are not sitting on jobs boards. They're not going through agencies on a rotator. And I'll also say who's to blame here to some extent. As a recruitment business, what we've seen is a lot of the employers.
I think it's always employers.
Yes, they're so bad. They have no clue how to deal with team members and they don't know anything about their team. They don't know where they're from. They certainly never visit them. They always demand too much without any training or support. They want someone to do 1,000 things and pay them peanuts. So we filter out employers as well. Yeah. What we end up with is reasonable employers, and we'll coach the employers if they're not good. We'll figure out where they need a gap filled, and then we match them up with someone who's a willing, ready and able, keen, enthusiastic person who wants to learn and to stay with that person for a long time. And then from then on, if they're a good employer and they have a good employees, they can work their own word of mouth and they can build their business that way like I did.
Yeah, great point. Yeah, it's interesting. One thing I've done with Gwen and Jane is I said from day one they could just work Philippine hours, you know, because I think that was a huge plus for them not to have, especially Gwen, she's got a child now. And for me, it actually works well because from Europe, it meant I overlapped with them in the morning and then I'd pass a lot of things on and then it would get done for when I come all the time. Things get done when I arrive in the morning. And I quite like that. You know, I don't like managing people, honestly. Like I like to have a few meetings here and there. I keep it really simple. And I like that I'm not dealing with them all day. We just chat a couple of times a week and then things get done overnight. You know, and I think people often want them to work the night shift. And like you said, that's what they want to get away from. You know, they don't want to work through the night. I mean, who does want to do that, you know?
Yeah, well, in our business, I call it magic Slack.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just pop things in there and then it gets done and everyone knows what they're doing and they're very established now. We meet once a week for about 10 minutes and we do it on audio because they're pretty shy and they don't like video. And I don't have any set work hours. I don't care when they work. All I care about is that our customer support is well supported.
Yeah.
So I have a sort of expectation that if someone makes an inquiry with us, that we'll look after them. You know, we'll give them a really good solution in a timely manner. That's the main criteria. The rest of it, like we literally don't have a days on, days off, annual leave, overtime, sick leave, any of that stuff. I pay them the exact same amount 2 times per month all year long. People are on different rates depending on when they started and what sort of role they do and how much value they contribute, but they get paid very consistently, and they have never been paid late in the entire time they've worked for me. I always pay early, and that creates such a strong bond. I can give you like the cheat sheet for a Philippines team member is number one, absolutely number one, is safety and security, because that one person is likely to be supporting 5 or 6 others. They cannot afford to lose their income. They cannot afford to lose pride or face. There's still that Asian pride. So number one is safety and security. If you can show safety and security, that is usually a far greater incentive than rewards or bonuses or schemes and complicated stuff. And second thing is, I don't like to micromanage or over scrutinize or monitor the crap out of my team. Like, who wants that? And that's like the first thing really rookie managers do. They want to install screen tracking software and micromanage their team, and they squeeze every ounce of flesh out of them. And I'm like, the first thing they're going to do is want to get another job. That's a real no-no. And there are only times where I've felt that it's a good idea to run the clocks on tasks, and that's when we're just working out new routines to figure out how many people we might need to do it, for example.
Yeah. Interesting. Now, I remember I've listened to your podcast on and off for a long time, and I remember you, if I'm correct, you used to have a very big team, didn't you, in the Philippines, and you sold a business or something. And how many people did you have at the peak of your team?
About 65.
Wow, that's a lot. All remote, all around the Philippines.
Yep.
Right. And how was that? I mean, you must have had some kind of management structure or something within the Philippines team.
Yeah, I did. I had we broke them into silos. So I had an SEO team. There was 38 people in that. We had a web development team. There was a dozen people in that. We had the publishing team. We had little other teams doing some bits and pieces as well. But in terms of structure, I had sort of the department leader for the SEO and the website development in particular, and then someone in charge of the publishing team. Yeah. And then they had team leaders under them. So it was... and then we had pods. And pods is how I teach my agency clients how to build a team out, little pods of three. If you can stack pods of three together very nicely, and a department leader could manage 6 team leaders.
Yeah.
So they have 6 lots of three underneath them. And then there can be little teams to the side that do separate things like research and development or video production or writing. So you had these little silos of work types. And within the little pods, it was like a team leader and then 2 workers, and they would share stuff. If someone was unable to attend work, then 2 people can do the work of 3 for a short time. And they could take turns being a leader if you want to test them out. And of the multiple team leaders, some of them are going to rise to department head. I think over 7 years, I had 3 people become the department leader. And, you know, like when you think about their qualifications, when I say what I'm about to say, people will understand why they're not getting the results that I got. The person who started with my SEO team was, I think she was 23. Her main experience was school to psychology degree at university to a call center supporting an accounting software tool. And then she came to work for me and she started working on doing link building and some SEO as a reputation management product that we had. And then I put her in charge of what at the time I had a contractor in India doing for fulfillment for SEO. And it was her and one apprentice. And so she's young, in her 20s, no leadership or management experience, never worked online for an online company, didn't know what SEO was prior to hiring her. And within 6 months, we went from zero to 113 grand a month with 38 team members.
Wow. Yeah, it's crazy.
So they can really blow you away if you unlock them.
Yeah.
But they come locked. They always come locked. And you've got to unlock them. And you said you go and visit them. That would be huge.
Yeah, definitely. Do you still go every year? I remember reading or seeing on your podcast in the old days where you'd book like a conference room or a hotel and you'd get everyone together for kind of meetups and stuff.
I mean, I used to go every 3 months or so, three or 4 months, but I live there several months of the year normally, except for last year. I haven't been there for 2 years come January, but I have a house there and I live there like 3 months of the year. And so I'm looking forward to being able to go back. I suspect that can happen again. I'll have to check on their end, but I imagine that can happen in, early in the new year. I can go back and visit and stay in my house. It's just been sitting there normally I will say, just as a rule of thumb, if you go and visit your team, and this usually makes sense when, depending on where you live, if you have five or six people working for you and you go and visit them, you will double your output.
Yeah. I've just hired in Cebu for that reason. I know there's obviously missing out a lot of great people, but it's easier. I can go and meet them all, go to the same place.
Well, they'll happily go to somewhere else as well. Like mine are spread out, but we used to have them come because inter-island flights are extremely cheap. They're like low-cost flights. They will catch a bus for 8 or 12 hours to travel from the – we've got people all the way up north in Belair. We had people down in the islands where your team is, and we also have people scattered around. But they used to come together and they'd really enjoyed it because, you got that in-person connection that you miss when you're online.